You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 22nd, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where it's the last day of school, or maybe it's Halloween, or maybe it's 2021. We don't know anymore. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Well, I know it's not 2021, Driftglass.
You're sure? You're absolutely sure about that.
You can tell from my blood pressure it's not 2021
that's true.
Yet.
That's,
the election's
that's true.
Still on, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And as Rachel Maddow tweeted this afternoon, it's Friday.
Yeah.
We have a super spreader of disinformation and distraction in the White House.
Yes, we do. We do. And 60 million chuckleheads who think he's doing a great job. That's why our number one sponsor these days is My Primal Scream Pillow. My Primal Scream Pillow, it's just a pillow and you scream into it.
And so everybody should feel free to pause this podcast and scream into a pillow if you need to.
If you need to.
We do
or
it.
After, or during. We do it.
We do it all the time. Yeah. Yes.
It's easier.
For
it's
fun.
Better. It's better than screaming at, you know, living creatures, people you're living with.
Oh, cats anybody. Yeah. Yeah. Just go to your room, close the door and scream into a pillow. It works pretty well.
Yeah.
We had planned to do a thing this week. Just, it made us laugh.
Right.
And part of it is we've been having conversations, not laughing, about how are we going to commemorate those who passed away from COVID after all of this is over and we don't have an asshole in the White House anymore.
That's true.
To where there is actually proper mourning. And nobody has to think up, you know, oh, by the way, we have to have an emergency press conference this afternoon.
Yeah.
To make me feel important and to show me trucks and motorcycles. And, you know, we don't have this idiot in the White House anymore. How are we going to commemorate what has happened?
Mm-hmm.
And you then turning it on its head because you could see I was getting low, you said, you know, we could have a tolling of the bells of all the people who shouldn't have jobs in Washington. Yeah, well, or in media. And that did bring me out of my funk. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
and then you went ahead and found the bell sound.
I did. The mournful bell sound.
And you wrote, let me see, how many of these do you have? Three? You only have 10.
Well,
okay.
I figure after 10, it stops being funny and just starts being
creepy. Well, so. I thought after 3, it stopped being funny. But you know what? Then you made funny names for each person.
I did.
So
I did.
And you really worked on this.
This is, well, not really. I just pulled this out of my ass. And this was to honor the 68 people who were just laid off at the Atlantic magazine.
Well, that's it. The Atlantic laid off 68 people, and yet. Mm-hmm. Starting last week, I believe, David Brooks has a column at The Atlantic. Oh,
a month
for
ago,
a month?
I think he's been doing this for about a month or two. But yeah.
He's doing that for free, right?
I assume he's doing it. He's paying them to do it. because there is no other rational explanation why David Brooks, who is arguably the wrongest man in politics. We're going to talk about the meaning of the word elite later in the podcast. But just as sort of an unbroken record of being horribly wrong about pretty much everything. Has a job at NPR and at PBS and the New York Times and NBC when he wants it, and now The Atlantic, basically
right.
repeating
so
the same.
So time out. I'm going to stop you.
Yes.
This is in honor of the 68 people who were just laid off from The Atlantic.
Yes.
Who are not David Brooks.
Right.
We are going to pause to remember some of those who are still being paid to speak or publish their opinions.
And who should definitely not be.
Got it. Christopher Octavius Siliza.
Joseph Claymation Scarborough.
Mika Sideshow Brzezinski.
Hugh, the cyborg sent from the future to destroy America, Hewitt.
Charles Nelson Moisen before using Sykes.
Margaret Maggie Handmaiden to Power Haberman.
Michael Gwendolyn Gerson.
Butchers Bill Crystal.
Brett Jar Jar Stevens.
And David fucking Brooks.
All right. So now that we've gotten that out of our system.
Yeah.
I do want to say I was a little depressed this week by a Twitter exchange I had where I had read the entire article this week that Chris Saliza wrote about, yeah, Trump's terrible, but people like him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. You've now read the entire article. Congratulations.
You don't need to go check it out because that was the point. Trump's a terrible, awful person, but hey, people like him. And my response was, I read this entire article and I have one question. Has Chris Saliza ever spoken to a woman voter? And then I had a GIF that said, nah, you know, and someone replied and said, why do you read Chris Saliza?
Yes.
My immediate reaction was, and I almost typed it in, was for work. That my job at Crooks and Liars is to read everything and try to digest it and figure out what's worthy of rising to the top. And I thought, that doesn't answer the question for why anyone would read Chris Saliza. You hate read him. That's why you read him.
Yes.
Or why I read him. And maybe it's time for me to stop doing that because it's really not worthy of my time to read Chris Saliza.
Well, as I mentioned in a post this week, I try to limit my Donald Trump mouth shitting intake to two or three lies per day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually the biggest one that rises to the top. And honestly, since we started doing this podcast way back during the Roosevelt administration, it has always been our intention to give our audience or to lend our audience our insight into why things are the way they are. It is extremely frustrating if you don't understand how the media works, even if you do understand, or how politics plays out at the national level, to look at how broken things are and wonder, why the hell do they stay this way? It is so clear that one party is fucking insane and has been insane for a really long time. And the people that they run for office are nuts and they appeal to people who are just like them, who are also crazy. Why isn't everyone else, including everyone who calls themselves a reporter, out there just pointing to this and doing what Jon Stewart used to do, which is just, oh my God, can you believe how crazy these people are? And that's, I think, the value, such as it is, that we lend to the national conversation from our perspective from the middle of the Midwest, which is we can walk out our front door and talk to all of the idiots and diners you could ever want to talk to. They live in our town. They are currently, I believe this afternoon, protesting at the state capitol. So we really do know what the actual, real, true Republican Party, as manifested by its members, by its voters, by its sincerest devotees, really is. As contrasted with the bullshit imaginary Republican Party that has been sold to us by people like Chris Saliza and hundreds of people just like him in the media for decades.
For money. Yeah.
And so the reason I don't follow Saliza that closely, he pops up, you know, as trending every now and then. I look over and everyone in the universe is saying, why the fuck is Jeff Zucker still paying this patently incompetent shithead to write terrible opinions and say them on CNN? Which is a very good question. And the question I have is, why has he been doing it all along? If this were a one-off, if this were just a mistake, yeah, everybody has a bad day. Chris Saliza has been wrong always, And he's always been terrible. And yet there's no way to dislodge him from the media universe. I find that fascinating. That long list of people that shouldn't be working in the media is actually 10 times that long, or 100 times that long. And the question, and the thing that fascinates me and really scares me is that these people have been around for decades. They have been lodged in America's, you know, information digestive system for decades, and they've been wrong for decades. And some force above my pay grade is protecting every one of them and making sure that every one of them has a huge national platform to lie to the American people. And that's what I think brings me to Chris Cillizza or any one of these people on any given day. It's
I want to add another perspective to that, which
sure.
We are watching Mrs. America, which I hope everyone is watching. It's really a good program.
It really is.
And I'm not going to provide any spoilers for it because you really should watch.
Well, and the story, A, I appreciate that. I would hate it if you spoiled it for me. B, we're watching it together. And C, the whole story takes place in the 1970s. So if this
and history has already taken place, but there are things that you could spoil because there are fictional elements to it, and I don't want to spoil this for people.
I understand.
That said, there it has brought to mind the issue of domestic violence, and it has brought to mind the show has brought to mind the issue of gaslighting and gaslighting on the right, that you will simply look at a camera. And this is historical fact. You know, Phyllis Schlafly looked at the camera and said, those polls aren't accurate. Those polls don't accurately reflect anything, when actually they did reflect the opinions of the American people about the ERA.
She just lied.
And Donald Trump is doing this exact same thing that Phyllis Schlafly did. He's looking at the camera and he's manipulating the press, and he's having emergency press conferences to reopen churches. And it is abuse. It is in the domestic sphere, when a more powerful, wealthier partner, and it does happen to men as well as women, looks at the weaker or less affluent partner and just lies to their face, that is a form of abuse. And we are being abused in this country this president every day. And so I feel that one of the purposes of our podcast is to be the friend who stands between the abuser and the abuser's enablers and the person who is trying to stay sane during this and says, no, what you're feeling and what you're hearing and how you're experiencing is real. And you don't deserve it. You deserve better than this. And what he is doing is wrong, and I will help you through this, because what he's doing is abusive to our democracy and to each individual citizen. And I will be the friend who says, no, what Chris Cillizza said is bullshit. You're not imagining that it's bullshit. It is bullshit.
That was really eloquent. I don't have anything to add.
Okay.
Very well put. There are supposed to be institutions to protect us from this behavior. That the collective will of the United States Congress is supposed to stand between us and a criminally incompetent, insane, racist president who lies all the time and has gotten 90,000 Americans killed. But one party will not permit that protection to kick into place. They will not be on your side. They would rather see Americans die by the tens of thousands than say a mean word about Donald Trump. The courts are supposed to be on our side, but Brett Kavanaugh sees things otherwise. The media is supposed to mediate between the parties. It's supposed to actually stand in the breach and protect us from threats to our democracy. They're siding with, or rolling over for, or shrugging off, or saying, well, you know, both sides do it, to a party that has been a threat to us, that's been abusing us for decades. So all of the normal protections that are supposed to kick in, they're supposed to save us, have all failed.
Well, and it's what came to my mind when Phyllis Schlafly over and over and over again says, you know, it's not the man's fault that the woman is being abused at the workplace.
Right.
It's not the husband's fault that the wife feels oppressed by housework.
No virtuous woman would ever be abused in that way.
Right.
It must be
right.
Those women are fallen, are sinful. Right. That's right. The problem. That's right. That's always the problem. It's always the victim's problem.
Right.
And the entire story of Mrs. America, which really is spectacular. If the casting is wonderful, it's just extremely well done. Takes place during the mid-70s. And during this period, we see the modern conservative movement take shape.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be fair to say?
Well, and the last episode is called Reagan.
Yeah.
But, so but now see, you know. Now you know everything you need to know about where what it's leading up to.
But exactly. We see yeah. Phyllis Schlafly. We see Jesse Helms. We hear about a guy named Jerry Falwell, et cetera, et cetera. All of the pieces are there. All of the pieces of the modern conservative movement are the groundwork. As Phyllis Schlafly says, the groundwork for the modern conservative movement was laid by Barry Goldwater. It didn't die. It's all there. So this is in the mid-70s when the conservatism, as we know it now, the racist, misogynist, lying, the liberal media are a bunch of communists who hate America conservatism
right.
was locked into place. And if you just look up on Wikipedia, you know, I was on a field trip in my junior high school when all this was going on. I literally was in Washington during a junior high field trip, taking pictures of the Watergate Hotel, which is very exciting. And the Smithsonian, but I was in junior high as this was happening. And if you go and look it up, Bill Kristol was in his early 20s at this time. David Brooks was 14. Joe Scarborough was 13. Rick Wilson was 12. Michael Gerson was 12-ish in that range there. So the conservative movement, these people swear, just went off the rails like 5 minutes ago, has been the conservative movement of hate and rage and racism and misogyny and lying for their entire adult life. That's the thing I really have to stress. Everyone who is telling you that they had no idea the Republican Party was this bad is lying. Or they're just completely fucking incompetent when it comes to speaking for the Republican Party, which means they shouldn't have a job anywhere because that's really their only job. So they grew up with the Falwell Party and the Pat Buchanan Party and the Rush Limbaugh Party as the default setting for the right. And they didn't do shit about it until Donald Trump came along. And then
why I'd like you to segue into reading a letter from our listener, Bob, if you would.
I'd be happy
right to. On topic.
Yes. It's from alert listener Bob, who dropped me a note literally as I was writing a post about the subject that he wrote me about. So I just laughed my ass off for a couple seconds. And here's what alert listener Bob wrote. This is the bulwark, Never Trump bulwark, the saviors of democracy. They have published a whole book about the Never Trumpers. Quote, Never Trump, The Revolt of the Conservative Elites, hardcover, May 11th, 2020, by Robert P. Selden and Stephen M. Tellis, in which they argue, quote, that right-wing elites are essential to sustaining democracy by restraining and marginalizing extremists on their own side and persuading liberals or independents. The bulwark goes on, Never Trumpers are the future of American conservatism. This is from today, May 22nd.
It's such a reach around back and forth.
But they have a book. And they have a book written by two scholars. And it's going to be published. And it's going to be all over.
Them they are awesome.
And the media, that the Chris Cillizza media, the Michael Gerson media, the David Brooks media, will take this book and hold it up as a shining example of what's good about the right and how the right can be saved and the right can be salvaged. And as alert reader goes on to say, which is pretty damn rich in and of itself, but from what I can see, the book consists of the usual suspects saying to quote you, that being me, oh my God, the Republican Party is full of Republicans. These clowns don't mind the racist and evil policies and the huge tax cuts for the rich. What they mind is the tone. Well, to sweet hell with a lot of them. They were window dressing for the fascist monster, the party that has now turned them into. Gee, I'm sorry, Dr. Frankenstein, your creation turned on you. No, I don't think I'll take your advice on anything. And then he ends, thanks for helping keep sane by hearing someone else say, this is evil and crazy. Well, we're happy to help.
Yeah. It's published by Oxford University Press.
Yeah, it's a real book. And every now and then I circle back around to, should I just stitch together I've got 9,000-10,000 posts out there, something like that. Should I stitch together a bunch of them and make a book out of them? And my practical brain says, no, no one's going to publish it. No one's going to read it. No one's going to lift it up and say, oh my God, look at this. That space is,
well, you taken. Know, if you titled it Charlie Sykes, the sexiest man alive.
True. I get,
they
I get
might publish one. It.
Well, now here's the thing. Speaking of elites, we are now in the middle of the rehabilitation of Steve Schmidt.
Yeah.
The full Steve Schmidt rehabilitation is now complete. He is, and this is the Steve Schmidt who brought us Sarah Palin, who fell off the Republican wagon and started talking, you know, in really brusque terms about his former party, like the minute Donald Trump started to rise, which is great.
Until the CEO of Starbucks decided he wanted to run for president as a Republican.
Well, and then he got real excited about how the Ocasio left was just as bad as the Trump right. He wallowed in both siderisms and centrism. Yep. And isn't it a shame
AOC how both sides are terrible? Was just as bad.
Just as bad. And this was on MSNBC. This wasn't on The Blaze. This wasn't on, right. You know, this wasn't on Breitbart. This was on liberal television. And everyone just nodded because, yeah, let's not let it out of the bag that one party is to blame. And this fucker sitting in front of me brought them to the brink. And that's when Howard Schultz dragged, you know, enough money in front of him to make him completely abandon his pretense of principle and go off and work for Howard Schultz as a centrist third party practical candidate. Mm-hmm. And then Steve Schmidt blew up his own podcast and burned that to the ground because someone mentioned this during his podcast.
Someone wanted him to explain his candidate's stand on the economy, and it was just a bridge too far.
Yeah. Well, and it was after all of this self-righteous, listen to how articulate I am because I'm a speechwriter. Listen to how well I talk about what a douchebag Donald Trump is. Give me time on TV. Okay, Steve. And then he turns around and says, but this Howard Schultz fella has got something. Maybe I'll go work for him. Like, wait a minute. No, there's two parties and you know how third parties are. And they take, no, I kind of like the money. I really like money and he gave me money. So I'm going to go work for him now. Like, oh, okay. So we can just forget the whole bullshit about you caring about getting rid of Trump. And then of course the money ran out and Howard Schultz folded his tent.
He had health issues and we hope we don't wish anyone.
No.
Bad health. But
the money ran out.
He wasn't
able
to continue his campaign because Howard Schultz has a bad back. So that's the way that is.
But the money ran out.
The money for Steve Schmidt ran out. Yes.
Ran out.
Yes.
And that's when Steve Schmidt started, you know, showing up back. And MSNBC fired him. They walked him out the door and said, oh, you know, we can't have
you're working for a campaign.
Yeah. Sorry.
And then you're blowing up your own podcast. That's probably not a good time for you.
And everyone's hair was on fire. Oh my God. I trusted Steve Schmidt. Oh my God. How could I have been so wrong? Oh my God. He was such a jewel of a man. He swore so well. He hated Trump just like me. This is the drunk prom date problem, which is any wing nut who validates any liberal gets panties thrown at them because he validated me. He said I was right. Would you like to come on my show now? And that's how he made a living for a while. And then, of course, it all went south. And then he gets invited back on MSNBC and starts showing up again. And I wrote about this a year ago, and I explained exactly how the career rehabilitation would work for Steve Schmidt, because it's always this way. It's always some wingnut or crackpot or somebody inside the club who fucks up real bad, fucks up in a way that if it were you or me, you would never see us again, ever. We'd be gone. But it's really important, for example, for Mika Brzezinski to get Mark Halperin back on the air.
Oh, yeah. She's still trying. Yeah.
And she's still trying, even though he was a shitty person to begin with. And there's no redeeming features about him. He's her pet. And he's a member of the club. And it looks bad when a club member is ousted permanently. So everyone who bothered to follow politics knew that Schmidt would be back. And lo and behold, there he is. So he's back on MSNBC.
So let's talk for a little bit more about elites.
Well,
let me
finish this one little thought, okay?
Yeah.
So then he shows up on the Al Franken podcast. And Al Franken asks him a bunch of questions about things. And Steve Schmidt weasels and waffles and talks about how much he loved Reagan and wasn't Lincoln a great guy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just won't acknowledge that the Republican Party has been shitty forever. And today, Steve Schmidt will be on the Stephanie Miller Happy Hour podcast. So the rehabilitation of Steve Schmidt, as predicted by us a year ago, is now complete. And why?
I disagree with you on one word that you're using.
Yes.
I think you're misdefining Steve Schmidt.
Uh-huh.
Steve Schmidt has a party trick that he does that, you're right, liberals throw their panties at because it validates them. But it's a party trick. He eloquently destroys Donald Trump from a perspective that is not liberal partisan. And I don't think that means that he's redeemed. He's given airtime and a paycheck. And sure. Yes, that's redemption. I get it. But I don't think that Al Franken and Stephanie Miller and MSNBC aren't necessarily, redeeming him is a strong word. I think they're putting him on because he fills a half-hour segment or, you know, the news business these days is about filling segments between advertisements. That's what it is.
That's true. That's true.
And he's entertaining, and he shows up on time for the Zoom call at this point.
Yes,
and he knows how to talk in 5-minute increments. And this is why Newt Gingrich kept getting invited back over and over again to blame liberals for the latest atrocity. Is because he showed up, he was in a suit, he knew how to sit on his suit jacket to make it look squared off. His hair was combed, and he could speak in sound bites that allowed them to get to the commercial on time. And if you're a known quantity, and people won't change the channel when they see your face, then you're in. So I really think that's all it is. And there have been times, what's telling to me are the times when you're not invited back. And that is the Mark Halperins. And that is the, Today Show guy, Matt Lauer, who tried to redeem himself this week.
Yes, he did,
by writing an article in on a blog about the person who undid his career, Ronan Farrow. You know, they're circling around Ronan Farrow right now because all these people are addicted to being on television. We have to do it, even if they've been given a contract buyout. It's amazing to me. I'm changing the subject now, but if someone gave me $26 million to not be on television anymore,
I'd take
like
it.
Like they did with Megyn Kelly, I wouldn't be trying to get on television anymore. And that just seems to be Megyn Kelly's full-time job now, is to try to find a way to be on somebody's show.
Well, and here's where I have to disagree a little bit with you. There are 300 plus million Americans right now.
Right.
And for some reason, it cannot be just a matter of convenience, because a whole lot of those people on the list that we just donged and donged and donged are just terrible at their job. Just terrible at what they do.
Well, Bill Kristol is definitely one of those people who just gets it wrong all the time and still finds a way.
But he doesn't find a way. He is invited back. There is a place for him at the table. And the only way you get a place for yourself at the table is someone reserves it for you. Someone above my pay grade thinks it's so important to have Bill Kristol at the table, or Charlie Sykes at the table, or Rick Wilson at the table, or Michael Gerson at the table.
Driftglass, the people who employ people who are on television, we have already established, are rather dim-witted and definitely risk-averse, and care more about advertisers than they do about viewers. So that's why. I mean, and I'm not trying to simplify it to the point of eliminating our need to talk about it.
The people who
run MSNBC are not doing this to enlighten people. They can say that all day long, but that's not why they're in business.
let's take the case you mentioned just briefly of Newt Gingrich.
Right.
The reason Newt Gingrich has a public career now is that during David Gregory's reign at Meet the Press, Newt Gingrich would do horrible, inexcusable, racist things, and then would be put in a penalty box for 30 days.
Right.
And then they would bring him out and put him on TV and never ask him about it. And then he'd do it again, and they'd bring him back again, and he'd do it again, and they'd bring him back again. Somewhere in that cycle, there is someone deciding that it is so fucking important that this specific lying, bomb-throwing racist must have a seat at the table no matter what he does. And we have to occasionally put him in the penalty box because he's a fucking monster. But he has to have a place. Bill Kristol has to have a place. And I want to know, because that's – flip a coin, man. Put anyone else on. There are – again, there are lots of people
who – anyone else doesn't have an agent who might be representing someone else they want to have on, mm-hmm. or representing three or four of their own full-time employees.
Well, then why not put Michelle Malkin on all the time?
Yeah. That was an embarrassment, wasn't it?
What? Yeah. So Michelle Malkin was on this week, and now she's basically running a white nationalist organization. But by this logic, there's no reason why she shouldn't have a spot on there. She should be able to go off and go to Nazi rallies and then go on Meet the Press, and no one will ask her about, hey, weren't you at a Nazi rally? But that isn't how it's done. These people are very carefully selected for a reason, and it doesn't matter how horribly wrong they are. That's where we get, to the word elites.
Which is
the question of what does it mean to be an elite? Because that's the title of this book. It's a question of party elites. Now,
read that book title again. Never Trump, the Revolt of the Conservative Elites. Right. Okay. So we're going to talk about elites today. Well, who are these conservative elites and which obviously they're the people on the bulwark who want to have him on their show, the authors of this book on their show, to talk about how great they are.
And elite is a font, font size, and we understand that. And that's always fun. But elite means literally, dictionary-wise, a select group that is superior in terms of ability or qualities to the rest of a group or society. So we know what an elite athlete is. Michael Jordan, for all of his faults, is an elite athlete. Muhammad Ali was an elite athlete. They're better than everyone else. And they stand alone or nearly alone in their excellence in a given field. I knew what the elite was when I was in high school debate. It's the people that won all the time, that were really, really good and went to nationals, and that was the elite. I know what elite speakers are. I know what the elite actors are. I have no idea how the word elite can apply to people whose alibi now is that they never had a slightest fucking clue what was going on in their own party, in their own movement for 30 years, even though that was literally their only job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that really just floors me. And the other part that floors me is how diligent the media is, MSNBC and CNN and everyone else, how diligent they are in making sure that no one is ever put opposite Bill Kristol in a chair who will ask him that question.
Right.
It's not fucking random.
But at the same time, we are going to elevate every story that equates Donald Trump with any Democratic candidate. Right. Because we have to have a horse race in November. Even the pandemic will not stop us from making sure there's a horse race in November.
So it doesn't come down. It doesn't just come down to parting your hair and showing up at the Zoom meeting on time and being quotable.
Because you're protected, right?
I am, as bald as Steve Schmidt, and I have a beard like Steve Schmidt, and I flatter myself that I'm nearly as eloquent as Steve Schmidt, and I show up to my Zoom meetings on time. There's no reason in the world why I couldn't be on a Zoom meeting with Steve Schmidt asking him the question, "How the fuck did you notice that your party was this bad all these years?"
And then he goes, blah, blah, Lincoln, blah, blah.
Right.
Lincoln,
No, he's done, right? that's where Driftglass kicks in. Because I'm like, no. That is that bullshit answer. You are supposed to be an elite expert in the field of politics. Your party has been this fucked up for 40 years. Were you okay with that all that time? Or just too stupid to notice that it was bad all that time?
Yeah.
And then we can have an actual interesting conversation, because all of these people, even people I vigorously disagree with, all agree that something has to change. Some reckoning must come, but the reckoning is always for someone else. No one at the bulwark thinks they need to pay a price for anything. They think the people who follow Donald Trump need to pay a price, because those people aren't really Republicans. They're not really conservatives. They're just Trumpists. No, they're Republicans. They're your people. You all need to learn a lesson and atone and fix this shit. And the way you fix this shit is like you fix any other problem, by correctly identifying it. And they are so terrified of being named as a co-conspirator, of finding their name on a list of people who fucked this country up. And I mean, Charlie Sykes was out of radio. He had retired. Why did he have to come back and write a book and say, the right lost its mind? Well, yeah, we know that. It was fully nuts when you were feeding them raw meat. Why are you involved in this at all? Why are you pretending you didn't know? You sat across from these people. You were friends with these people. You put Paul Ryan on the map. And you're sitting here telling me that you're just innocent of all this. This just happened outside of your orbit. You had no clue, et cetera. There's no other profession where this would be acceptable as an excuse. There just isn't a public excuse. And yet every day, every single day, these people are on some large media platform telling a gullible public that they had nothing to do with this. It wasn't their fault, that they understand that those people over there aren't really Republicans or not really conservatives, and that the way to save democracy is to give these fuckers more power, more
and allow us to build a lifeboat that allows an elite group of Republicans to represent the party again.
Yes.
Because that's how we got away with it up until Trump.
And where they're going to get their voters from, I don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
Because all of the 96% of the Republican Party are taken. They are not going to go back and vote for Jeb Bush. They want
exactly.
They want a goon. They want a fascist to vote for. They want a nice, proud, out and loud racist they can vote for and feel good about being scumbag.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and liberals aren't going to vote for him. Democrats aren't going to vote for Jeb Bush. So where's this party going to come from if there's nobody left to vote for it? And the answer is, well, we don't need to worry about voters because we're the elite.
Well, and that was the interesting part about the interview with Stuart Stevens in March with a African-American woman from Almond Pouring Company who really laid into him. Like, you knew that this was all a lie. You knew this was happening. Mm-hmm. You knew there was you were going after the votes of racists, and you did it anyway. And Stuart Stevens, as you said, he has been redeemed in your mind because he really is saying, no, this is all a lie.
Yeah, it was all a lie.
The Republican Party is not redeemable. They are liars. They are lying to themselves and to the entire country.
And I was part of it. And I was part of it, and I'm responsible for it, and I take
for what I did. Yeah, but this reporter really laid into him and said, yeah, but you knew. And your mea culpa isn't enough because you knew.
Right.
And he said, quite candidly, I was there, and I think if you duct taped Steve Schmidt to a board and made him tell the give him a truth serum, he'd say the same thing. My job was to win elections.
Yes,
that's it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. My job was not to do policy. My job was not to make any decisions about tax cuts or abortion or anything. My job was to win elections. The way you do that is you look for voters, you find their prejudices, you find their fears, you find their loves. And you market a candidate to check all the boxes so that they win. And once they win, you know you've done a good job because they won. And that's all I cared about. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of this is just real cynicism that we're going to have, bloody Bill Kristol on and not remind anyone that he was fired from this job and this job and this job because he's just incompetent and makes up stuff and doesn't know how to write, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, but he plays the role of a jovial old timer in the Republican Party who's a never Trumper. And so we're going to have him on because our job is to sell dick pills.
Yes.
And no, people won't change the channel. White men who are the market for dick pills will not change the channel when Bill Kristol is on going, ho, 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 ho. Just whatever you're marketing, big pharma to gum or whatever it is, you really want to get onto that commercial. Mm-hmm. And if you won't change the channel when Bill Kristol is on, then he wins.
And that's a really good point. And so here's my question for the imaginary person who could answer it, which is you, which is, okay, fine. Rick Wilson and Charlie Sykes and Steve Schmidt, just pick three, were mercenaries. They're hired to win elections. They don't give a shit if they tear the country apart. They don't give a shit if racists burn the place down. They really don't give a shit.
And it's like any other marketing person. Right. You know what Bill Hicks says about marketing people?
Yeah.
They don't care if the tomato sauce is full of sugar.
No.
And will rot your teeth and doesn't really taste like tomatoes. It's 10% tomatoes. They don't give a shit. They're there to make people who want to cook with tomato sauce buy it.
Hey, that hating marketing dollar is a good dollar. That's a good dollar.
Fuck you all.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Let's acknowledge that that's what they are. They are mercenaries who are good at whipping up a crowd of bigots and getting them to the polls.
Right.
Terrific. Right. Then how are they being – again, I'm not directing this at you. I'm directing it to
the – No, I understand.
How are these the people these mercenaries, the ones being called upon to be the moral philosophers of conservatism. You know, Blue Gal,
that's a really good question for the conservative movement. And yeah. I think we're, like you said, and as I have said just now, the test of time is, do they win elections?
Yes.
And if they win elections, then okay, your cynicism was justified. You know, it doesn't matter. We're just going to play to people's fear and racism and win elections. Then, yeah, that worked. Hey, congratulations. That worked.
Yeah.
And it worked with Donald Trump by the skin of his teeth.
Yes, it did.
You know, and the help of Vladimir Putin. And the question is, the rest of us whose health care is threatened by this person and sanity is threatened by this person and now life or death is threatened by this person in the White House. You know, Donald Trump is losing the olds.
Yes, he is.
The ones that he didn't lose, you know, that he never had. The olds that he had, he's losing. And I don't want to insult senior citizens who never would ever in a million years vote Republican, let alone for Trump. I'm talking about the people who thought, oh, you know, I don't like the tweeting, but he's a good guy. That
good guy.
Crystalliza, right? Yeah. That Crystalliza analysis. He's losing those folks because they realize he doesn't value their lives. He doesn't value the lives of their parents. If their parents are still alive and in a nursing home, he values the stock market more than he values their lives. And he's willing to sacrifice their lives for the stock market.
And I'm old enough to remember when the corrupt Republican power broker who could not be crossed or he would destroy you and was clearly nuts and clearly evil and clearly just taking the party to hell was called Tom DeLay.
Right.
And back when David Brooks was wringing his hands saying, this DeLayism is so terrible. Why can't we talk about Republicanism as it's supposed to be? And that was a very long time ago, except, you know, as liberals, we are obliged to remember these things. But there's always why didn't anybody cross Newt Gingrich? They were terrified of him. And at the end of the day, if your alibi is, I spent 30 years being terrified that the fascists running my party would kick me out of a job, then you shouldn't have that job.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. No one should listen to you.
Well, let's talk about Philip Reins for just a minute. Let me talk about Philip
Reins. Please do. Yeah.
Philip Reins wrote an article behind a paywall at the Daily Beast about immersing himself over his ears with right-wing media, including blogs, including The Blaze, including Fox, including OAN, for a week. And comes out saying, oh, these people are terrible. And I just want to say, you know, Media Matters and Crooks and Liars does what Philip Reins does for a week. They do it every day without a paywall.
For years. And for decades.
Every year. Reverend Bobby at Media Matters does it 50 weeks a year. Watches Fox and Friends as his job. And so it's not... I'm not impressed particularly. And I know that there's a whole drama about Tom Nichols and Philip Reins and him blocking you and the Twitter thing that we don't have time for. But no. you did write about it, and it's worth looking at driftglass.blogspot.com and reading about Philip Reins and getting a much better analysis than I just gave it. Let's switch over to David Jolly, because he actually left the Republican Party.
Yay. Right? Yay. He's never going back. Yay. And you know what? He goes further. He warns, and this is I believe he was on the Joy Reid show or quoted somewhere. It's a direct quote that most of my fellow never Trump Republicans will go right back to being a Republican when Donald Trump is gone. So he's telling the truth. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good for him. Telling the truth. So instead of going back to the GOP, and this is where the uh-oh starts. David Jolly, everyone's favorite former Republican congressperson, is forming what is, by my count, the 1 millionth boutique third-way centrist PAC.
Mm-hmm.
Jolly, and this is again quoting him directly, feels liberated by rejecting partisanship. And I'm not ready to pick up the blue jersey, if you will, the ideological blue jersey. But I do want to see something better. Nationally, we're a democratic reform organization focused on increasing competition for, wait for it, both parties.
Now, if his PAC works on electing members to Congress who want to eliminate what Moscow Mitch has done to the U.S. Senate, I'm all for it. But I don't think that's what he's talking about.
Well, here's the thing. How many Republicans are going to run for office to undo gerrymandering?
Right.
And undo Citizens United and undo what Moscow Mitch. There's one party that's going to do all those things if they get done at all. And saying that I don't want to deal with that because I'm rejecting
partisanship. I don't want to pick up New Jersey and I just want to reject partisanship.
Really, man? Really? Or if that's the case, why don't you go sit on the board of the Purple Project or the Centrist Project or No Labels or any of the other dozens of bullshit
lifeboat organizations?
They're already there and they're already doing no good work as far as I can tell, except they're wringing their hands and praying for a day when Donald Trump isn't president so that every single thing they stand for isn't highlighted as bullshit. Because
they can go back to tax cuts and deregulation and eliminating Social Security and other.
Well, and it's really hard with Donald Trump as the million watt Klieg light shining on the Republican Party. It's really hard to advance a both sides argument. I mean, that if there's an endangered species under Donald Trump, it is the both siderist, because it just everyone laughs at them now. But that's what they want. They want to go back to a time when you could be a Republican centrist. You know, we should have a center right and a center left party. You know, we do. It's called the Democratic Party. And it's got centrists and center right and center left. All the same people are in one party. And all the bad, crazy people are in the other party. And if that's partisan, then I'm partisan. But if you can't see that, then you shouldn't be involved in politics. And you certainly shouldn't have a platform where you can persuade people or talk to large numbers of people because you don't know what you're talking about. Either you're incompetent and just refuse to see what's in front of you, or you're lying. Either way, you shouldn't be really given a platform to advance the bullshit notion that both sides are problematic and we need to work across party lines. No, we need to get rid of the Republican Party and then let the Democratic Party become two parties. That'd be fine with me. I ache for the day, and I know you do too, when we could have arguments with conservatives, principled, decent arguments over shit, which the last time I had one of those was probably in the 80s or 90s.
It's intoxicating to do that. It's fun.
It's fun.
But if the response is, you know, fake news, Newsweek is a Democrat organization,
right?
As I got on Facebook, we can't talk about that because you're quoting Newsweek and Newsweek is a Democrat media.
And
oh my gosh.
And if the response is the women's libbers just want to rip babies out of bodies and they're all communists, which is Phyllis Schlafly part chapter and verse. She lives on in the body of the Republican Party. If that's all there is over there, then there's no argument to be had. This is that we're at war and one side has to win and they have to lose.
All right. Well, we're going to read some letters and we're so grateful to you for writing us and sending us apportionment from your Donald Trump check. I got the Donald Trump letter in a Treasury Department envelope like it was from the IRS, and then you open it up and it has the White House letterhead printed on the top of it because this is what Donald Trump wanted. And then the back of the letter's in Spanish, which I just can't wait to hear what MAGA thinks of that. Mm-hmm. Some people have been able to afford to send us a portion of that check to support the podcast. And one particular correspondent wrote "fuck Trump" on the memo line of his check. And we want you to know we saw that and we appreciated it. And so I will read his letter first. It is from Tom. He says, "Blue Gal and Drift Glass, guess who got his Trump check? I wonder how much was wasted on those you're welcome letters from the Orange Treason Weasel claiming credit for the work of others, in this case, Congress. As usual, I'd feel kind of dirty if I kept all the extra cash myself. So in honor of our last legitimate president, Barack Obama, I'm spreading around half to people and causes I know would piss off you know who. With love, Tom." And thank you, Tom, very, very much. This one is from Melinda. Melinda writes, "Dear BG and DG, what a fantastic show last week." And I don't know which one this was, but we're so glad. "The passion and power of Driftglass's analyses and critiques are always in evidence. But last week's performance was, as Blue Gal noted, stellar. and Bluegill's compassion and piercing insight are of incomparable value. I love you guys. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Melinda. We love you right back. And she wrote quarantine cash on her check. So, yeah, I have a feeling this is more of the same. You know, people are sending a portion. We deeply appreciate it. This is a letter from AJ, who sent us a Veterans for Peace card and says, "Dear DG and BG, just a little note to go along with some funds for the cause," written while finally catching up on the last episode. And we noticed this from our stats, that people will have to skip a week and come back and listen, you know, a week late. And that's just fine with us. Once again, awesome work. I don't always agree with all I hear weekly, but I am 100% laser focused on the one true task of 2020, the defeat of Trump and the eradication of crazy both-siderist centrist media coverage. Thank you for being one of the only truth-based hours of punditry each week. It is a crime, your show, and you personally are not invited on the other more widely broadcast pod shows. I hope you are actually having spring. Here in upstate New York, we are still waiting. We're still waiting to have a congressional representative, too. In New York 27, we'll have an election in 6 weeks, and we might just send a Democrat to D.C. from this gerrymandered district. His name is Nate McMurray, and I think the kind of candidate you both might like. Check him out. Okay. Since my space is nearly gone on this card, I'll close. I hope the donation helps. I'm still working, but wife is now laid off. Two college kids are back home. I pray you both stay well, and please keep up the great work. With warmest regards and solidarity, AJ, hashtag both sides don't, hashtag burn the lifeboats, hashtag F the effing Yankees. All right, that is an old school person right there.
Old school, man. That's news blog days.
Back in the day. All right. And then I saved this one. This is the last one. Just because sometimes, I mean, we notice this with thank you notes, and I've said this before. You perfectionism gets in the way of writing. And
yeah, true.
We want to send you the most perfect thank you note that we can possibly send you. And some people want to send us the most perfect letter, you know, and compose something because you're writing to Drift Guys and Blue Gal. And this person sent us a check with a post-it note on it and a smiley face. And it says, "Hi, Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Something here for the tip jar. We love your broadcast, and we never miss it." And then a signature.
Yeah.
And Suzanne and Bruce, we appreciate that so much. It's that simple. You know, sometimes you don't need to say. Sometimes you need to write four pages, but sometimes you don't. And we just want you to know: don't let perfectionism get in the way of reaching out to us and letting us know you listen and you like the show. And we appreciate that. That's a very nice note.
This is a trap, and we both teach writing sometimes and facilitate journaling classes sometimes. Mm-hmm, and this is a trap we both fall into, too.
I mean, absolutely.
I'm writing, and in my head, what I'm writing is being read aloud on a Ken Burns documentary with violin music in the background. And I want it for the ages. This should be able to be incised in granite. And I'm like, that's not just the right perfect word. And the other half of my brain is, dude, shut up and hit publish already. Okay. Yeah. There's three typos in here. You never catch them because your brain doesn't work that way. Just do it and move on. Just say thank you and move on. And that's.
Well, and I've had to write, and a friend of mine has had to write letters to families of people who have passed away.
Yes.
And it's the hardest letter to write. It's the hardest thing to write a condolence letter and say everything you want to say about the person who's passed. And the fact is we're getting close to 100,000 people in the United States who passed away. And it's just, all of us are going to have some opportunity in the next 5 to 10 years to write to somebody who's lost a family member.
Yep.
And that's demography. And that's also this terrible virus. Mm-hmm. And as I said to this friend who was really struggling with, gosh, I don't know what to say to this person. I said, saying, I don't know what to say to you is okay. Yeah. It's okay to say, you know, there are no words for what I'm feeling for you right now, but I'm with you. I can't share the level of grief that I know you're experiencing, but I love you and my hugs come at you across the miles. Whatever you're feeling, if that's on the page, that's going to come across. So, and that's what I had to write to my sister and her family, who's, you know, my sister's partner's daughter died of COVID. And I had to say, you know, I know there are no words for what your family's going through right now, but I love you and I'm with you. And if there's anything I can do to help you, please let me know. And sometimes that's all you can say. So just know that when you, you know, on a much lighter note, when you write thanks for the podcast on a post-it note, and I open that and see that there's a $10 check or a $5 check or whatever you can afford, I know, I feel heard and I feel appreciated. And it doesn't have to be, right, it doesn't have to be the Gettysburg Address, right? It doesn't have to be, it's all of your letters are from the heart. And we really, I mean, it's tiresome now to say we really appreciate it. But the times really when you come home with an envelope and I open it up and read it to you and we laugh and we say, oh, isn't that nice? You know, and we share these things with each other. It warms our hearts and we really do care about you. So thank you so much.
Can I end on an uplifting note?
Please.
This just came across my Twitter transom moments ago. I've spent the last, it feels like, 14 hours bitching about elites and failures and the media I would urge you to go, we'll put a link up at the podcast, to go see Simone Sanders just kicked the shit out of Chuck Todd today on television.
Oh, good
just
for her.
Dragged him down a corduroy road the wrong way through Cactus. Yeah, it's a sight to behold. And she's kicked ass.
She's a strong and powerful woman who knows how to do that.
She is.
And we need her.
And she got a seat. Now, how much of a better world would it be to have her on a lot more and people.
She can have all of my potential seats.
Oh, she can have all of mine. Just take away from the column marked Bill Kristol and add to the column marked Simone Sanders.
Yeah.
And I'll shut up. You won't hear another, but of course that's not going to happen, but take our victories, take our wins when we find them. And her just stomping Chuck Todd, you know, is blowing his hair back across a Zoom camera is something to see. Something
good for her. All right. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. As you may know by now, Donald Trump has forced the churches to reopen.
Yeah.
And so this week's internet kitty is Beelzebub. Beelzebub is a beautiful black cat, aptly named. And, you know, Donald Trump can go to hell. Beelzebub, as all of our internet kitties, he eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Beelzebub. I never thought I would read those words on the podcast. You can visit Beelzebub at our Facebook page or website. You can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hashtag save the post office. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford, and I know times are tough, we know that. But if you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself in the drive-thru, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our full-time job. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at proleftpod.com. And that's where our snail mail address is, as we call it, U.S. Postal Service address. All of the information you need to donate in whatever way you want to donate to us, all that information is at proleftpod.com.
And our merch is there, for goodness sake.
And our merch is there. The Both Sides Don't t-shirts and tote bags and mugs are all there. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties can confirm that Diamond and Silk, together and separately, did not make Joe Biden's VP shortlist.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.